This is the Bigger Pockets Podcast, show 188. How is it? I mean, 180, how many was this show? 188? I've never heard of Walking the Mortgage. Have you, Brandon?
I have not.
Between the show and all the years.
I've done it a couple of times. It's pretty cool. I bought this.
You're listening to Bigger Pockets Radio, simplifying real estate for investors large and small. If you're here looking to learn about real estate investing without all the hype, you're in the right place. Stay tuned and be sure to join the millions of others who have benefited from BiggerPockets.com, your home for real estate investing online.
What's going on, everybody? This is Josh Dorkin, host of the Bigger Pockets Podcast, here with my co-host, Mr. Brandon Turner. What's going on, man?
I'm good, but I got to tell you, my brain is hurting a little bit. I learned a lot of stuff today.
Oh, like how to walk, like how to spell your name, like
how to paint a picture.
I know we're starting behind, but like really?
No, we just got done recording the episode with today's guest, and this guy is a great show. You guys are going to love this thing. I mean, seriously, my brain hurts. I learned so much stuff today, and I'm excited for you guys to be able to hear it. It's pretty awesome. So, yeah.
It is. Yeah. Things that we had never even heard of, like walking the mortgage.
Yeah. I love that concept. Love
it. There's some really, really cool stuff. He's been around. He knows what he's talking about. I'm pumped. Well, let's get into it. How you been? How's life?
Things are good. I don't know. Baby's growing up big and strong. She's now 3 months old almost. Things are good. Oh. It's fun being a dad. How about you? You've been gone for a while.
Yeah. I was in SoCal for a bit. Got to take the kids swimming, hit the beach, go boogie boarding. We went to Universal, which was
the Harry Potter thing.
Harry Potter thing was fun. Yeah. The whole thing was great. Actually, a really funny story. I'm going to call out one of my daughters. I'm not going to call her out by name because I'll forever destroy her. But we went on the Simpsons ride at Universal. And so the Simpsons ride is you get into this car that you can fit like, you know, four across the front row, four in the back. And this thing rises you up. And it's like being in an IMAX movie, except you're on a moving vehicle that goes in all these directions. And like, as an adult, you're like, oh my God, I'm flying through the air in Simpsons land. But imagine you're a 5 year old and you don't really know what's happening, except like you went from reality to like Simpsons land and you're like crashing and all these things are happening. Well, let's just say that my 5 year old had a fit unlike I've ever seen before, screaming, absolutely mortified by this ride. It was so frightening. And you know, like you're sitting there, you're like, there's nothing I could do. I'm strapped down. I cannot help you. I cannot get to you. It was a cool ride as a grown up, but I could certainly imagine as a little kid losing your mind. So she was good later on in the day. And yeah, the Harry Potter area was pretty awesome. So we had a great time.
Good. You scarred your daughter for life and good.
No, you know what they have, which is the coolest? They have these donuts. They've got to be like, I don't know, 8-10 inches across, these giant Homer Simpsons donuts at the Quickie Mart, which I did not give into temptation and have.
You know, I was at Universal like a year and a half ago or 2 years ago. I also did not give into that temptation, but that ride was amazing.
That was great. Anyway.
Good stuff. Anyway.
Well, let's get into today's show.
All right. Let's do it. So today's show, we're talking a lot about market cycles, which you guys are going to love. I mean, if you're worried about your market being too hot right now, you're going to love this.
Why don't we get to today's quick tip? All right, guys, today's quick tip, the pro signature. So we've got so many pros on Bigger Pockets who you guys have the opportunity to have your company logo in your forum signature. So when you're out there interacting with folks on the Bigger Pockets forums, you can actually get your brand out there. So let's just say that you were out there and you've done, I don't know, a few hundred forum posts. Every single one of those posts as a pro, you can have your company's brand, your company's logo right there below every single post. So if you are a pro, this is very advantageous to you in your marketing. So I strongly recommend as a pro to get out there and make sure to upload, to connect to your company account and get that logo up there. And if you're not a pro and you're trying to build your business and you're trying to build your brand in front of the 1.3 million visitors that we get each month to Bigger Pockets, getting a pro account might be a good idea.
And where would they go to get a pro account, Josh?
They could do that at biggerpockets.com/pro.
All right, good deal.
You might think you want real estate, but that's not true. What you really want is passive income. With new investors struggling to find deals or get enough money to buy them and veteran landlords tired of the constant tenant phone calls, is there a better alternative? Actually, there is. Short notes from Connect Invest. Connect Invest is an online investing platform that allows you to easily participate in passive real estate investing, and all you need is $500 to start. Short notes collectively funds a diversified portfolio of commercial and residential real estate projects across acquisition, construction, and development phases. You'll earn a fixed monthly income without the hassle of owning or managing real estate. Head to connectinvest.com/BP to create your account. Fund your digital wallet with at least $500. Select from 6, 12, and 24-month short notes with annualized return rates up to 9%. Then sit back and let your monthly returns roll in. Join today by visiting connectinvest.com/VP. connectinvest.com/VP. Passive income without the property headache? It's possible. There's a way to invest passively in real estate and get monthly income without any tenants, maintenance, or property management. The Wealthy have been doing this for years, and if you're an accredited or high net worth investor, you too can collect cash flow without the headaches that come from owning rentals. How? By investing in a private real estate fund with PPR Capital Management. PPR's co-founder, Dave Van Horn, wrote the book on real estate note investing for BP. But he's not just investing in notes. Dave and his team also have an extensive background in commercial real estate. And with PPR Capital Management, they're strategically investing in both notes and commercial real estate nationwide. With over $500 million in assets under management, PPR has provided individuals with a steady source of truly passive income since 2007 without ever missing a payment. Check them out at investwithppr.com. Again, if you're looking to get monthly passive income from an experienced team with a strong track record, go to investwithppr.com today. The easiest way to collect rent? RentApp. RentApp is a seamless, secure, free payment tool for small rental property owners like you and me. Built by a team of fintech veterans behind Square and Cash App, RentApp uses ACH bank transfers to deposit rent directly into your account. Landlords love RentApp for its unbeatable convenience. Isn't it time you made rent collection easier? RentApp, the free and easy way to collect rent. Learn more at rent.app/landlord. That's rent.app/landlord.
All right.
Let's get to the
Ready.
I think we are ready. I think you guys are going to love this. Grab out a pen and paper. You're going to need to take some notes. If you're driving, pull over or just stop in the middle of the road. It's okay.
Yeah, don't do that. do not listen to Brandon. Please.
Ever. Just every time I talk today, just mute it and then come back on.
Yeah, pretty much. All right. Okay. This is show 188 of the Bigger Pockets podcast, and you can check out the show notes at biggerpockets.com/188. And if you would please jump on your iTunes, hit subscribe if this is your first time listening. If it's not, please leave us a rating and review. That would be very valuable. And if you're listening through some other tool, please be sure to do the same.
And if you leave a rating review, let us know. Shoot us an email or let us know on Twitter that you just left us a review so we can give you a virtual bear hug.
There you go. Like all right. That. Today's guest, David Gundmundsson. I might have butchered it.
Probably.
But, David Gundmundsson. David is a real estate investor. He's been in the game since the mid-90s, and he's done pretty much everything.
Yeah.
Residential, houses, condos, mobile homes, apartment buildings, strip malls, commercial land, acreage, notes, you name it, this guy, everything but building ground up construction, I believe he said. So he's pretty much done it all. So listen up. He's got lots of great things to share, and let's bring him in. What's going on, Dave? Welcome to the show. It's good to have you here.
Hey, it's good to be here. I appreciate you guys having me on. So
can I call you Dave, by the way?
I go by just about anything. So
can I call you?
Hey, Brandon,
John.
Call this jerk by his real name.
All right. So Dave or David, or I'll say Dave. I like Dave. So you've been doing this investing thing for a while now, right?
Since I got my license in 94 and I bought my first investment property in January 1995.
Okay. So you've been doing this for just a couple of years. So,
yeah.
Okay. So you've seen a little bit, you know, highs and lows, and you've kind of seen that, which I love talking to guys. I mean, I love talking to newbies as well, because it's fun to hear the first time stories, but I love to talk to the veterans who have been doing this for 10, 20, 30 years, because you get to get that bigger perspective. And so that's what I'm excited about today. So why don't we start at the very beginning of that? I mean, how did you get that very first deal?
Well, okay,
can I even go before?
Oh, go ahead.
I mean, fine, whatever.
Why real estate? I think we should start with why real estate.
All right.
And it's a good question. When I was going to school, you always, you know, get a good education, get this, get that, you know, yada, yada, yada. And I just wasn't that guy. I went through school and it just didn't make sense. I've always wanted to work for myself and have my own business. And I'm like, okay, it's not like I'm not going to hire myself because I don't have a college degree. Yeah. So I got started in real estate, where a lot of my dad's friends were pretty wealthy, and invested in real estate for a number of years. And so I said, you know, these guys have something. I mean, they kind of goofed off during the day. They also worked hard, but they built their assets and the assets produced income. And with that, I mean, they're able to travel around the world and do a lot of things that I've always wanted to do. So, yeah. And that's kind of how I got into it. I read a lot of books, and I believe in being self-taught. So I read, I forget what books in the beginning, but I just about read everything. And I came across in January 1995, I closed on my first one. Back then, we used to look at newspapers. And before the internet,
yeah.
You know, those filthy ink rags. And back then, they used to have FHA no qualifying, assumable. If you were a mammal and you had a pulse and you had $125 and whatever the down payment the seller wanted, you could actually take over these loans and freely assume them.
Wow.
It was awesome. It was awesome. So I came across this one. It was a condo in this place in Chandler, outside suburb of Phoenix. And I think it was they wanted $4,500 down, something like that. And I could assume their loan and the purchase price was, I think, $40,000, something like that. And I bought it and I closed on it, and all you had to do is just send in $125 to the title company and you could assume it and get it. I had no credit and, you know, started as a real estate agent, starving, you know, making less than I would at, you know, Mickey D's or something. And I that's how I got it. Wow. And I remember it was interesting because I didn't have a clue what I was going to rent it for. I just remembered that I wanted to clear a certain amount of money over the payment. So I was going to ask, I think, $575. I said, you know what? I'm just going to go $645, throw a little 3x5 card by the pool, and I end up leasing it out in like 24 hours.
Nice. Wow. I want to ask a few questions on,
sure,
on
yeah.
the specifics. I think some of our listeners may be lost in the weeds as to what just happened. So,
okay.
So you've got, all right. So I go, I send $125 to the title company. I now assume the loan.
Correct. Yeah. So everything went through title and you just write it up as a loan assumption, and the title company took care of everything like a normal deal, but you would assume the loan.
So it costs you $125. You don't have to put any more money down on this property.
Well, I gave the seller $4,500.
So you give the seller $4,500. Okay.
And
you said the property was worth about $45,000. And once you assume the loan, now the property is title changes over to you.
Correct. So I get a full deed to the title, warranty deed. And what was interesting is a lot of these loans, they did it during the 80s, and then I think they phased out the assumable no qualifying around December 14th, 89, something like that. And VAs used to be assumable too before, I think it was 1988 in March. And what was cool is a lot of these loans were already 8-10 years into term. Mm. So even though, you know, the payments or the cash flow was, you know, a couple hundred bucks a month, you had some massive principal pay down.
Yeah.
So you could have $200, $250 a month go toward principal reduction,
right?
Because it was a loan with 18 years left, not 30. So
yeah. So can somebody do this today?
No, they got away with it they quit doing it in the late '80s, and then the loans were available even during the '90s. But with the refinance boom and all that, as soon as you refinance it was gone.
Yeah.
So and FHA loans are fully assumable now. You just have to qualify them and occupy the property.
Right. Right.
So.
Okay. So you're beginning, you started, I mean, it sounds like you didn't end up doing the college path. You
Correct.
dove knee deep and you got your agent license, started to buy, you bought this first condo, you're renting it out. You're off to the races. You're your own boss, right?
Now what? Yeah. Well, and then, you know, I had a couple of dollars to start with and I was lucky, but I got to a point where I ran out of money. I was actively buying a property a month right out of the chute. And I got to an interesting point where I ran out of money. But I learned and understood the process of buying. And that's why I think it's really important to learn. Like I was playing last night on my iPad, the game of Monopoly.
And
it's kind of cool. You can play with the computer or against the computer. And what was interesting is I said, you know what? I can never win at Monopoly unless I roll the dice and I buy houses. I mean, it sounds simple, but it's so true where it's just like, you have to roll the dice, man. You have to take a plunge. And you know what? That first property, I was scared to death. At night, I stayed awake, worried about it. Oh, what if I can't rent it? What if I can't do this? I didn't know what the heck I was doing. And I mean, you just don't have a clue. How do you don't know till you know.
Yep.
So, and I remember it'll be one of my famous four, but it's a good book I wrote and I'll tell it then. But it was written by a real estate agent who lived in Arizona who was an investor. So it's pretty cool. And I was able to pull a lot of helpful tips out of that book and it really helped me get started.
So let me ask you this question real quick. You talked about when you got started, you didn't know what you were doing. You just kind of started doing it. Can you Correct. Can kind of speak to our audience today? There's a lot of people listening to our show who are in the same spot. They have no idea what they're doing and they're nervous. They're scared to jump in. Should they also just sit back? I mean, like, should they just roll the dice and jump in? Should they wait until they learn more and more and more? I mean, is there a point to jump in? Where should they get involved?
You know, that's a good question. And I would say you can only learn a certain amount via books, podcasts, and stuff like that. And I think you guys have an excellent podcast. It's extremely educational.
Oh, thanks.
And it's, I think it's the best out there. And I think it's important to educate yourself. You know, you can't be an idiot and learn how to do this. I mean, you have to keep, you have to learn, but you get to a point where you have to do. And, you know, there's people sign up for boot camps and all the educational things and this and that. And heck, I mean, I've seen somebody blow 40 grand on, buying this stuff, buying in that. And sometimes it's like, you know what? Let's just say you bought a house, tried to flip it, and even if you lost money, it's important to learn the process. It's so important to learn the process. And once you understand the process, you just replicate it. And I think real estate investing is kind of like a set of stairs. You get to a point where you learn everything you can about residential rentals. And, and I kind of got to that where I've bought it, I've sold it, I've leased option it, I've owned or carried it. You kind of done enough, and then you're ready to go to the next phase. Maybe it's lot splits, maybe it's commercial, maybe it's, land, whatever. But what I did when I first was investing was when I ran out of money, I said, the reality is all I need is money because I understand the process. So what I did was I actually cash advanced credit cards and used the cash advance to buy properties. And I don't advise that to everybody because it can be scary. But what was interesting is I understood the numbers and I understood how to do the math. And it's like, okay, you know what? If I buy this property and it's going to clear $200 a month, that's $2,400 annually. And if I invest $10,000, my return is 24%. And I knew as long as I made 24%, that's the highest my credit cards could go up to. And I could still cover the bare interest on these things and not go into trouble. Wow. So, but like I said, I don't advise that to everybody.
Pretty risky.
But that's how I got going. I used credit cards, cash advance, and bought a ton of the stuff in the mid 90s.
Nice. Hey, David, it sounds like the first bunch of deals you did were these assumable, small properties, assumable. How many of those deals did you end up doing?
Give or take. Dozens.
Okay.
Dozens. And then what was interesting is VA, and I think you can still do this today, you can legally wrap VA loans.
Interesting.
You can't assume them, but you can wrap them. I think after March 1st, 88, they're assumable with qualifying or they're wrappable. And what I remember this one deal I was doing where I was searching the MLS and looked for things that said VA mortgage. And I'd reach out to the agent and say, hey, you know what? I'm interested in this thing. It needs work. I want to put together a deal. What if we did a wrap? And she's like, what's a wrap? And what's interesting is just because people are in the business doesn't mean they know what they're doing. I mean, they could be 20 years in the business, but they could have the same 1 year experience 20 times. Yeah. So I set a meeting. I said, listen, let's get together with you, me, and the seller and see if we can structure this on a VA wrap. And what I told her though is I said, it's not my place to, embarrass her in front of the client. I said, let's just work together and try to put this thing together. And we set up a meeting with her, the seller, and myself, and I went through on how to do a VA wrap. Agreement for sale, equitable title, legal title in Arizona. And I went through the whole process, explained it to him, explained it to her, and it made sense. And we did that deal. And the importance, I think, of that is a lot of times people in the business, they don't know, but they're afraid to say they don't know because they've been in the business 10 years, 20 years or whatever. So a lot of times, even the newbies, you'll get to a point where you might know more than the people helping you out, and don't assume everybody knows everything that you do because they don't,
Can you really quickly explain a wrap to folks who don't know what you're talking about? All the 20, 30 year veterans listening that are like, I've heard that, but I don't know what he's talking about. And to the movie.
and mind you, the disclosure is every state's going to be different.
Yeah.
But the theory behind a wrap is that the loan stays in the seller's name. And I believe in complete transparency. I tell the seller, listen, you're on the hook for the loan. If this payment doesn't get made, it will negatively affect your credit. And we have it set up where it's title insured for the seller, fire insured, and account service. So the principle behind a wrap is that I will make the payments to the title company, and the title company will get the payments. Let's just say the payments are $500. We won't get into principal and interest, taxes and insurance, $500, and then that payment's going to go to the bank. What I would do if I was a seller would be do what they call a token carry back. And what that is receive X amount of dollars per month. Maybe it's a dollar. They know every month that 501's getting paid the title, 500's going to the mortgage company, and a dollar is going to go to the seller. If they don't get their dollar, they know the payment's not getting made. So, and that's where sometimes I want to let the sellers know I'm here to protect them and that, hey, we'll set this token carry back up. So every month you don't get your dollar or $10, you know that the payments aren't getting made and you're going to have to step up and do it. But it, you know, and that's one pitch that I'll do when I do the creative financing is to say, hey, here's a potential risk, but let's try to, you know, mitigate it. So,
so who does title go in? Does it stay when you do a wrap? Are you, does title in your name or in their name?
They retain legal title and I retain, I get what they call equitable title. So okay. In Arizona, it's an agreement for sale. And so technically when the thing's finally paid off, then I would get conveyed full ownership, but I can still sell it when I own it then or refinance it and do it. So I have all the benefits of ownership, but it just makes it easier for them to foreclose.
Okay. Yeah. And this is definitely one of those things, like you said, state specific. I mean, every state's different. Some states have, what are they called? The
contract for deed.
Yeah, contract for deed. Yeah, exactly.
Deed to trust. You know, every state's different.
Yeah, exactly. So. But it's an interesting thing. And some people, you know, we've heard a lot about subject two. Like, do you know, like, how does this compare to subject two?
You know, and I've always wondered that too, where you have, and I've done it where here I just do an agreement for sale.
Yep.
So we do the conveying interest instrument instead of a deed of trust as an agreement for sale. Okay. And that's recorded and that's kind of how we do it. But
so I guess subject two is like, is I get legal and equitable title, but the loan stays in their name. I'm just buying a subject two. So that sounds like
they could be signing a deed over to you. Yeah. So.
Okay.
But by the way, just a quick bit to anyone listening. I mean, if you're sitting listening and wondering what the heck is going on, if you're lost, or if you're interested in like, oh, this sounds awesome, I'm going to go do it. You know, it's, you know, this is one of those things you definitely want to talk to your real estate attorney. You want to talk to your accountant and you want to make sure that you get solid advice for your area, you know, legal and financial advice before getting into these kinds of deals. So always, always, you know, confer to your counsel.
Yeah. Absolutely. Because it's complicated. It's really complicated. The owner carrybacks are a lot more fun and that's a lot simpler. It's a lot cleaner. And those, you know, those are fun. I've done a ton of those.
Well, let's talk about that. Well, before, I want to ask you about what that is and how you do it. But before I do that, how many total deals, just so people can have perspective of what you've done, how many total deals would you estimate you've done in your career?
Probably between 250 and 300.
Okay. Cool. So you've done a couple.
And mind you, a lot of those aren't like flips. I'm in and out. I'm not wholesaling these things in and out in an hour, a day or 2 days. I mean, a lot of these I've held it through different cycles and, you know, I've bought in different times. I bought a lot in the mid 90s, liquidated. I had, I think, 70 or 80 places at that time, units, and then liquidated just about everything in 04, 05, 06. Yeah. And I got out early. And then I sat out for 3 years and didn't do anything. I mean, just it's crazy when you used to buy something once a month and then you literally do nothing for 3 years. I just did brokerage. And then in Phoenix, we were like the epicenter of the crash.
Yep.
Oh, yeah.
And 09, 10, and 11, I went crazy. I mean, I bought, you know, I did, it was the time to buy.
Yep.
And I bought a bunch during that time.
That's cool. Well, we'll definitely.
And we're going to go there.
I want to spend a good chunk of our show on market design. But before we get there, so overall, again, to go back to big perspective, you've done 250, 300 deals. Are these, I mean, flips? You said you've done, you know, have you done pretty much everything or have you been focusing on kind of one strategy or two?
You know, I enjoy kind of doing everything. And I even kind of typed up some notes that way and kind of go through. I've done residential, like houses, condos, mobile homes on land, apartment buildings. I own strip malls, auto-related, so commercial buildings, land, raw acreage, infill, custom lots. So I've kind of done it, not all, but I've never done any ground-up construction, but I've done pretty much most of it with residential and some with commercial and a little with land.
Wow. Yes. Okay, so you've done a few things. So let's go back.
Hey, Brandon, I thought we were going to get somebody experienced on the show. What, where'd we get this guy?
We'll work on it. All right, so let's go back to seller. You mentioned seller carryback. Is that the same as seller financing? And what is it and how does it work?
Okay, and that's where it becomes fun. Is I remember, you know, I was talking to a buddy of mine and he's like, hey, how do you get these sellers to carry? I'm like, I ask. Because it's so important to ask and connect with the sellers. Everybody, like, let's just say you're a seller. Oh, I want to get cash. Okay, great. You get cash. What are you going to do with the cash? They haven't even thought that far.
Yeah.
They're like, well, I guess I'll throw it in the bank. I'm like, okay, great. You're going to make what, 0.5%? I don't know what the bank pays, 0.5%, 1%? It's under 1, right?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And And it's just like, it's like, hey, you can make 5 to 10 times that amount if you own or finance. Oh, what's that? I said, oh, it's great. Not only do you get some cash at close, but you get monthly income without the nightmare, you know, the tenants and toiletries. Yeah. So they love it, where a lot of these people are retired. They maybe owned a sort of rental property. They're just tired and done. And so I'll explain to them and say, oh, it's great. You get some cash at close. That way you can pay your bills, do what you want, go on a trip. And then you get a nice monthly income. And then if we do a balloon payment, you get, you know, money at the end. So, and there was one is really unique. And let me look at my notes. I bought it for, this was, I think, 2 years ago. She was set on her price. Oh, I got to get 165. I got to get 165. I said, okay, you know, it's not worth 165. I planned on using it as a rental, and I need to be into it for 140. And I said, okay, let's do something really cool. I'm going to get you your price of 165, but I'm only going to pay 140. Well, how are you going to do that? I said, okay, I'm going to give you 140,000. I'm going to give you, we negotiated 20, but there's some judgments and other issues. So I had to end up giving her 40. And I said, I'm going to pay you 5% annually. So 5% on 100,000 is 5,000. If that carryback goes full term, which is 5 years, that's $25,000 with the interest payments. So I paid her 140, but I also showed her that she can get her price of 165 by putting, and that's what, I mean, I don't think it's smoke and mirrors, but it's just outlining out what's there. And she was happy with the 165. Hey, I got my price. Now she can tell, you know, the neighbor or her daughter that they're arguing with about that. Hey, I got what I needed to get. Sometimes it's just about saving face.
Yeah.
So in this case, she got a 165, which was the lump sum plus all the interest payments.
No, 140. I gave her 140. I had to buy this for 140.
Yeah.
But I showed her that if the carryback went 5 years, that if I paid her 5,000 a year in interest,
yeah,
it would eventually add up. And this is what the crazy part of this deal was. I ended up deciding to fix it up, and it turned out so nice, I just decided to sell it. So I sold it, and I called her up and said, hey, I got to pay you off. And she didn't want to get paid off. I said, yeah, I got to pay you. I'm selling this thing. I don't want to get paid off. So I've done this before. It's called walking the mortgage. So I took that loan and moved it to another property that I had. And all we did is just go through title and just do a substitution of collateral and change the legal description.
That's cool.
I've never heard of this.
Yeah. tell us about the I'm following you. I love this. So go ahead and
say it. Interesting. Wow.
Yeah, tell us that again.
How is it? I mean, 180, how many? What's this show? 188? I've never heard of walking the mortgage. Have you, Brandon?
I have not.
Between the show and all the years.
A couple times. It's pretty cool. I bought this one property, and this is years ago, and I bought it on a private note, private seller carryback. And let's just say the interest rate was 6. I held it for a number of years, and then I turned around and sold it on a wrap. And the cool things with wraps are you can increase the interest rate. So I was paying the seller 6 and they were paying me 8.5. So not only do I make an arbitrage I get a return on my equity, I also get a spread off the interest rate.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. And then this is what was neat was it didn't have a due on sales clause. So I sold it on a wrap. 2 years later, the guy called me and said, hey, I'm refinancing this property. I'm going to pay you off. I said, okay. So I called the seller I bought it from, who has, you know, making the payments to, and I don't want to get paid off. I don't want to get paid off. He didn't even know I sold the property. I didn't have to notify her because there's no due on sales. And she was adamant about not wanting to get paid off. So that's when I did the first walk the mortgage. This is forever ago in the 90s. And we just moved it to another property. I even went from a first to a second. She didn't care. She just knew I paid. So even though she went from a first mortgage to a second, she just knew that, hey, you know, the loan's with Dave, he's going to pay me. And, you know, that's when I originally did that the first time. So
they don't care what the collateral is. They just care that they're getting the payment. So you just shift it over.
Absolutely. And I heard this once because I used to also loan private money. I used to do hard money loans. And I had somebody tell me this, where a good borrower could make a bad loan good and a bad borrower could make a good loan bad. Where, you know, if someone's going to pay, it doesn't matter if they're upside down or not on the house. If they're a good borrower, they're just going to pay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, and you could have all the collateral in the world, but if the borrower's a bad borrower, they're just going to be late every month. So, yeah. But, and that's where she just felt comfortable enough with me to know that, you know, wanted to walk that over to somewhere else. And I've actually done that a couple of times. So
how complex is that process? I mean, who besides, you know, the seller and you, like who else needs to?
Just title did it all. So what?
Title does it all.
You just treat it like you're just doing a loan on a property. And that's the important thing about having good contacts. And it was kind of a, you know, interesting when I was talking to Hillary the other day, and I had some technical difficulty on my end trying to figure Skype out, where I think it's important to, one thing I've learned is I've never been the smartest guy in the room. Far from it. And I think it's important to know that you just know you're not going to be the smartest guy, but I think it's important to be able to pick up the phone and dial and have any of the smartest people you know on speed dial. Yeah. And within 5 minutes, you know, I had my computer guy on the phone. We're able to fix the problem and it was done. And that's why I think it's important, where you have to take the time to develop relationships with people, you know, investors, attorneys, accountants, title people, where you just know that you know the concept of what you want to accomplish, but let them figure out the technical details about it.
Yeah.
And they just did. I said, listen, I want to secure note A to property B. What do we do? And they just type up whatever and it's done.
I love it.
Awesome. Oh, it sounds cool. Sounds really cool. Well, I mean, we can keep digging. I'm sure we'll learn some other stuff that we've never heard of as well. But I know Brandon and I were really excited to dig in on market cycles. I think it's something that you like to nerd out about a little bit. And we haven't really done a great
show. Hey, I resemble that remark. So.
You should. Like, so, you know, I think you use them to make buy sell decisions. Clearly you were one of the few people who got out before the crash, probably because you realized that market cycles were kind of funny at the time. So let's dig in. What exactly is a market cycle?
Okay. I mean, it's just like, you know, you have peaks and valleys. What's the oldest? Forget location. It's all about buy low and
sell high.
That's it. I mean, that's as simple as it gets, but it's extremely complex if you think about it. So I remember, and I read a lot of books. I remember in the 90s, I was reading a book about timing market cycles. And I said, okay, cool. I want to try this out. So this is in 97. And I remember looking around and saying, okay, I want to find what markets are absolutely in the toilet. Okay. And at that time, I believe it was the Northeastern states and California. And Northeastern too far, too cold. I looked at California, San Francisco too expensive, too far, San Diego too expensive, LA either it's really expensive or there's some pretty tough areas. So I came across San Bernardino, California. And this is, I think, in 97. And I said, okay, the market was really bad then. I think there were some bases that closed. And I said, I went into that market and say, why is this area going to turn around? Why is it going to thrive? And I drove around and I just said, you know what? There's lots of buildable land. I think it's going to turn. And I bought two apartment complexes. And I bought I think it was a 15 unit and an 8 unit. And what was funny at the time was I was in my late 20s, been married a couple of years, and I'd owned, I think, 15 homes, and I just bought two apartment complexes. And what was funny is I still didn't have enough money to actually own my own home then. Isn't that funny? I actually lived at a family member's house, and we you know, house hacked, where we rented out the four bedrooms upstairs and used that to kind of help pay for bills and stuff. But, you know, that's another story. But I think it was important just to sacrifice, where I'm like, you know what? I want to sacrifice now, because I know if I go all in, it's just going to get better down the road. So in Arizona and in California, in the mid, it was at the bottom of the cycle. Arizona hit the bottom in the early 90s, had the savings and loan scandals of the 80s, and just all kinds of things went wrong. And so I bought a bunch of properties in 95, 96, bought in California in 97, 98. The one thing I learned about buying out of state is that no matter what, no one's going to run your property like you're going to run. We went through three different management companies. The 15 unit was a disaster. I had partners on that. I ended up selling it. We sold it for more, but by the time you figure time and commissions, it was a break even, and it was a total loss as far as time. But the other building I hung on to, and I hung on to it for a while and sold it. And I sold it too early. I don't remember what year, it was somewhere in the 2000s, but I sold it and, you know, got a pretty good check off of that one. And it was great. And what the interesting thing I've learned about market cycles is that Arizona, we boom and we bust. In the mid 80s, we boomed, and then they took away the tax laws, and then the market busted. And then the early 90s through the all the 90s, we boomed. And then 05 and 06, we had this hyper crazy boom. And what I found was I sold out in 04, 05, and I sold out some, I think one or two in 07. So not at the peak, but not before the 08 crash. And what I learned is that, let me give you an example. I have one property. It's a textbook example of a market cycle property. Is this property is in Mesa, And I bought it for $75 in 1999. And it rented for $800. And I held it for a number of years. And then I sold it in 07 for $188. And at that time, the peak in that neighborhood is maybe $200. But this is what's interesting is the rent stayed the same for 10 years. It just was flat. It was $800. Wow. And I think the trick to understanding market cycles is my golden nugget on that thing would be is look at return on equity. What's the cap rate on that house? When I bought it in 99, the cap rate is just the return based on it being free and clear. What return would I make if the house is a $100,000 house and if I net 10 grand a year, it's a 10% return. Right. So that house was probably about a 10% return. At the peak of the market, that home is valued at $200,000. It's still rented for $800,000 or $850,000. The return on that investment would only be 4%. Okay. And I sold that in 88. And this is, or I'm sorry, I sold it for $188,000 in 2007. That same house went back as a short sale and I had an opportunity to buy it for $49,000. And I knew the guy. And I'm like, you know what? This guy's going to be ticked. So I actually passed on it. And it actually went back to the bank for 50. I think it sold for 54. I actually bought a house around the corner in that same neighborhood for 40 grand.
Wow.
Okay. And that home rents for 850.
Still rents for 850.
850. It's the same. Yeah. And now the rents are finally going up here. But that's what I say is if you can figure out your return on equity, my return on equity on that thing was, okay, so 800 if I'm netting out, you know, I mean, it's probably if I'm netting out 600. You know, annually is what 72. So it's probably 15% return. You know, I had to put about 10 into it. So I'm into it for 50. Okay. So if I'm making 15% return unleveraged, that's a great return. Let the market go to zero. I don't care. And that's what I did during 09, 10 and 11. You could buy homes in Phoenix, 3 to 4 bedroom homes, West Phoenix, certain areas of Mesa, 3 bed, 4 bed, 2 bath, then rent for $800. You can buy them all day for 30, 40 grand.
That's crazy.
And how do you go wrong? Oh, go ahead. Sorry.
No. You're dead on with what you're saying. Like, how could you go wrong? I'm actually going to ask the question because I want to know how and why did you know to sell? And to your point just now, how did you know it was safe to buy? A lot of people look at the housing market. They said, well, you know, it crashed. It's down. It's crazy. And
calling,
you know,
catching a fish. Catching a dropping knife. Yeah, it was. It was.
I mean, is this a smart time to be jumping in, or should you wait till things stabilize a little bit? So, like, those are the questions that I have, and that I'm sure other people are going to have. Is, you know, you're talking about timing this thing. It makes sense what you're talking about when you start to look
logically,
like, hey,
but you're not, because you factor in the emotions and everybody goes crazy.
I like how you talk about the rents. Right, the rents didn't really rise. Right, so you know, to buy that property today, which was 06, 07, whatever it was, you know, you're still only making 800, you're getting a 4% return. You know, it's starting to look a little, you know, skewed, right? Yeah. So that seems like a signal to me. What other signals were out there for you that told you it was time to sell? And what other signals do you look at on the sale side? And then we'll look at the buy side.
Excellent question. A couple things. This is what was really interesting. I was running into a time where in 04 and part of 05, I was getting people with terrible credit that were applying for my houses. And I'm like, this sucks. I mean, they're horrible credit. I mean, it's terrible.
Yeah.
And I heard that I would decline them, but then I heard they went and bought a home. What the, you know, I mean, it's, are you kidding me? And it was crazy. And I remember even doing brokerage during that time. I did a lot of brokerage where I sold apartment complexes, small apartment, you know, fourplexes, that kind of thing. And the joke would be is, hey man, we implemented this thing in the MLS like 30 minutes ago. You know, where's the offers? Then all of a sudden, bah, 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 you know, the things are kicking out the fax machines and you sell these fourplexes.
What's
that?
What's a fax machine?
So we'd get the old fax machines, you know, and we would sell these fourplexes that rented for $400 to $500 a unit for $350,000. Wow. And the only upside play was appreciation. No cash flow. Who cares about tax write-offs, man? If you're losing your shirt, I mean, you know, who needs a tax write-off? And what I found was that they were only playing the upside game. Yeah. The problem with that is as soon as you have the upside game taken away, it's like musical chairs. 20 people, 20 chairs, music's on. All of a sudden the music goes on, you know, Everyone's dancing. Lights go off. Everyone's partying. They don't realize quietly chairs are being taken. Yeah. And I've always kind of been in early and been out early. So I, you know, I got out early, sat down, took a chair, put my legs up, relaxed. But then when the lights go on, you're not the other 19 people fighting for four chairs that are left. And it was brutal. I mean, it was tough. It was really, really tough here. People just, I had friends that just lost their shirts.
So maybe this is a good time to ask this question is, you know, you were talking about back in the day, you noticed that, you know, you list something on the MLS and offers start flying in. Yeah. This is the story everybody's talking about today, that today you list a house and you get 15 offers before the weekend's over.
Especially in my market.
Yeah. Especially like when you look at Denver and things like that. I mean, should we be, in your opinion, should we be worried? Should we be getting out?
I can't tell anyone what to do. I can tell you what I've done.
Sure.
I'm gone from 60 to 30 homes that I'm selling.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm starting to sell. And you know what? You're never going to hit the exact top and you're never going to hit the exact bottom.
Yeah. Yep.
And it's like, you know what? The home that I bought for 40, I got an MLS for 170. You know, we got it out there. So I'm selling it.
Yep.
So, and you're never, and I look from a logistical standpoint. If you have, let's just say you have 36 homes and if you can only liquidate two a month because of renovation and turning over the tenants, it's going to take you a year and a half to get out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's kind of, and the market cycles, in my opinion, is it's kind of like having a cruise ship do a U-turn. It's not going to happen all at, it's just, you know, so, and I think you have some of these and I'm kind of looking at my notes where I'm just starting to liquidate out the homes and you get to a point where if the home you're in it for 40, it's selling for 170, it's quadrupled.
Yeah.
I mean, if I get out now, it's going to go, maybe it goes up 25,000-50,000, but it's not going to quadruple again. It's not going to double. I have to look at all these where you buy them for 30-40, they're selling for 150-160. I mean, they've quadrupled. You get to a point where it's important to, you know, take some chips off the table.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so
I mean, there's not necessarily one or two things that you're looking for. You're kind of looking at the big picture view.
Correct.
All the multitude of things that are happening. I mean, for me, I remember, you know, when I got out, you know, started to get nervous about the market was in 04, was it 04, 03, when I was living in LA, the famous story of that, to me, my famous story of it was, you know, a police officer who had just bought this $1 million house.
Yeah.
And, you know, I wish our police officers could buy $1 million houses, but, you know, it doesn't really work out that well with, you know, salaries. And when I heard that, I was an agent. I was like, this is not good. This is a really bad sign. You know, when people, this guy is, you know, the note's gonna balloon on him and he's gonna be, you know, in a lot of trouble. He's going to lose his house. And so is everybody else. Well, let me start to unload. This is kind of a dangerous time. People are in trouble. You know, that was one sign. There's, I don't know, people who say, you know, I kind of think that people who say that they didn't see it coming probably weren't looking or they were kind of too caught up in the mix of what was happening because I think there were some very, very obvious signs like those, but like take less obvious signs, you know, take a market like Denver. For example, right now, Denver, hot as hell. You know, houses are selling in, you know, a couple of days at most. Yeah. But we've got a mass population influx. You know, we're getting 10,000 people a month moving into Denver. There's jobs. There's, all the economic signals are good, but prices are going to the moon. You know, how do we know? You know, when do things turn? You know, these are the things that I know lots of people are trying to figure out. I know. I'm just curious about your feedback on something like that.
You're never going to pick the exact, you're never going to pick the day it hits top and
of course
time it hits bottom. But you ever heard the boiled frog analogy?
Yeah.
I can imagine it.
You know, you throw a frog in a hot boiling thing of water. It'll jump out immediately. You throw it in a cold thing and you turn it up. He doesn't realize it's hot enough that he needs to get out and he'll eventually boil to death.
Wow. That's amazing. you're a great, pleasant man, dude.
But the point is that, you know, it's somewhere between the top and the bottom. And, you know, you kind of just were near the top. What's the top? You know, the day, the time. I don't have a clue. Sure. I just know that when you get to a point where there's time to, I feel I have more to lose by hanging into the very end than the amount I would gain. And what I'm doing right now is I'm selling and getting into land and selling and buying land and, you know, some commercial. And I think too, I think it's important to have a short, middle, and long term goals. Like right now, my short term, I'm doing flips. Anything residential, I'm in, I'm out. Get in, get out, under 6 months. That's my short term box. Mid range might be if someone's going to do value add, like build spec or add a bedroom bathroom. Here in Phoenix, everybody's punching out in historical areas or nicer areas. They're dropping in, a master suite. They're adding on 500-600 square feet. They can do it for $80 a foot and they can sell for 180. They're making a good spread on that. And then I think you have your long-term box of investments that might be a year and a half to 5 years. I think it's tough to look past 5 years, and that's what I do is like, my rentals have always been, I knew in 09, 10, and 11, I was buying all these rentals. And during that time, it was tough. I mean, I was starving. I mean, imagine buying these homes. In each home you buy, you need to drop 10 grand into, and then buy 15 of these dang things a year at least. I mean, I don't know where the money's coming from. I was borrowing from this and that, credit cards, wherever I can get the money. And that's, I think, the important thing to look at too with market cycles is look at money flow. You could get smoking deals in 09 and 10, 11. Who had cash? But if you had cash, cash was king. Now, money's really loose. We have tons. You can get hard money so easy. Hard money's super loose. FHA financing is financing just about everything here under 300. And it's money's loose again. And when money's loose, you know, deals are hot. Markets are selling fast. I mean, who knows if it's the top, but it's not a bad time to cash out on some.
Yes. So for somebody who is listening to this show right now and they're looking to buy their first deal or maybe second or third, you know, they're new in their career. Mm-hmm. Do you have any recommendations for them? Like, would you say flat out, maybe you should just sit down and just take a chair and wait for the lights to come back on and the music to stop? Or do you advise them just to look for the best deal anyway? Or what's your opinion?
It depends, you know, because you have to understand, like, Phoenix was Phoenix, Vegas, California, Florida. But you go to other places, I don't know, other markets, say Texas, and you get some of these markets where it's pretty even keeled, where they just don't have the huge run-ups and rundowns. Yep. And my point with the market timing is, if you time it right in the real volatile markets, you can make a ton of money. But if you time it wrong, you'll get crushed.
Yeah.
And that's where you have to figure is just, as a newbie, if you buy right and you're going in it for the long haul and you're in it right and you just know you're going to be okay. And, you know, I it was tough here because the same homes that I bought for 30 and 40,000 in West Phoenix topped out at 2.25.
Yeah.
And
what is buying right? You know, because I think, you know, a lot of newbies get excited by the thrill of appreciation. And, you know, some of these old hats, you know, we were like, well, be smart, make sure there's cash flow, you know, don't just buy on spec, basically. So what does buy right mean to you?
I mean, a couple things. One, okay, I'll break it into two different things. One, I'll break it into rentals, and then I'll break it into flips. Okay. And I was going to tell newbies, if you want to figure out how to source deals and analyze deals, I think it's important to understand the numbers. And like, give an example, I use like ZBuyer. Okay. And ZBuyer email you 5-10 leads a day, and it costs a couple $100 depending on the market, submarket. But the cool thing I think would be, if I was a newbie, I'd get on Craigslist or ZBuyer, one of those. You get the deal and you immediately go through the numbers. Say, okay, you know what? Even if you don't have access to MLS, pull up Zillow and say, okay, the deal's worth $100,000 based on 4 or 5 homes that have sold between 95 and 105. I know it's going to cost me 10% cost of sale. So that brings it down to 90. And you look at it and you figure, okay, it's a medium renovation. Maybe it'll cost you, you know, 20. So from 90, you go to 70. And then if you want to make 20 profit, you go from 70 to 50. So, you know, hey, if I want to flip that deal, I buy at 50, I sell it at 100. Those are the numbers. And I think it's important to go through those and learn those in your head. I'll do that 5, 10, 20 times a day on leads. And you just get to a point where you just do it in your head. And you have to look at the data, but you do the numbers in your head. If I was looking at an investment, it depends on your return. You might have different return on investment criteria than I would. But I think if you look at, hey, if you're making single digit returns, I mean, that's pretty thin. And you have to look at back in the boom, if I'm going to buy this house and make 4%, there's better, safer investments that I can do than put my money in a house. Cause it's not, even though it's classified as passive, there's nothing passive about rentals.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, so I think you just have to figure out your own criteria and stick to it. But I think it's important to constantly develop and add to your criteria and, you know, change it a little bit based on the market and the scenario you're in. So. Yeah.
I agree. And since we're kind of talking about the whole analyzing deals thing, I do want to give two quick shout outs. First of all, if you guys aren't using, you know, the BiggerPockets property analysis calculators with rental property calculator, flip calculator, wholesale calculator, or BRRRR calculator, you guys check them out, biggerpockets.com/analysis. And also, this coming week, we're going to be doing a live webinar here on BiggerPockets. And so it's on Wednesday night. Hope you guys can make it. It's called 5 Things to Know Before Buying a Rental Property. Seriously, these 5 things are vital. And in there, we're going to talk about a lot of the stuff that we're talking about here today with Dave. So hopefully you guys can join me. Come biggerpockets.com/webinar. You can sign up and I'll hopefully see you there. So with that, I want to go back to, you said ZBuyer. I'd never heard of ZBuyer before.
Yeah, it's interesting where they rank on Google and they just, it's interesting. I think that if somebody wants to, what I'm finding in this market is there's two different type of real estate people. There's the marketers that they know how to market. They know how to get on the front page of Google. They know how to, you know, get the phone to ring with, you know, yellow letters, whatever. And then you have the real estate, you know, guys and gals that understand the mechanics of real estate. And I think both are important, but with the leads in ZBuyer, I mean, it's a good way to just source deals and review them and check them out. And they somehow appear on Google and they get leads and they're not in the buying business. They're in the lead selling business.
Okay.
So it's kind of an interesting niche and, you know.
Yeah.
So.
Interesting. Yeah, check that out.
Whether you need to buy or sell, or you're just obsessed with looking at homes for sale, Redfin's got you covered. Redfin updates their listings every 2 minutes to help you see new homes first. And they give you personalized recommendations based on the homes you like, so you can find a home that's just right for you, whether that's a cabin, a craftsman, or a castle. With the top-rated Redfin app, you can favorite homes, share listings with others, and schedule tours even on the same day with a local Redfin agent who can help guide you through the whole home buying process. And if you're looking to sell, Redfin agents have the experience to help you get the best price possible for your home. That's because they sell twice as many homes as other agents. With a listing fee as low as 1%, Redfin's fees are half of what others often charge, which means you'll have more money to put towards what matters most to you, like your next home. In fact, last year, Redfin saved home sellers $127 million. No matter where you are in your real estate journey, Redfin can help. Download the Redfin app to get started today. We're always looking for ways to improve, searching for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for better is by matching with quality candidates. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of the show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BiggerPockets. Just go to Indeed.com/BiggerPockets right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Indeed.com/BiggerPockets. Need to hire? You need Indeed. Pretty good little episode, right? While you were listening, you could have been getting paid rent with RentApp. Landlords love RentApp because it makes rent collection a breeze. RentApp uses ACH bank transfers to deposit funds directly into your account. Setup is straightforward for renters, and landlords don't need to download anything. Both have peace of mind with the digital transaction history. Isn't it time you made landlording a little easier? RentApp, the best way to pay or collect rent. Learn more at rent.app/landlord. That's rent.app/landlord. You're trying to close on your next rental, so why is your insurance company dragging its feet? With long lead times and never-ending paper forms, it's no wonder it takes forever to finally get a policy. Modern investors deserve better. They deserve Steadily.com. At Steadily.com, you'll get fast, affordable landlord insurance available online 24/7 in just a few clicks. You can even get next day coverage, which takes just minutes, by the way, to obtain. And you can do it all from your phone. Steadily was founded by landlords who created insurance products tailored to the unique needs of this industry. It's their sole focus, and that's why landlords nationwide consistently rate them 4.8 out of 5 stars. So whether you've got a single family, short-term, or multifamily portfolio, Steadily.com can secure the best coverage at the best price to protect your properties. Discover how Steadily can save you both time and money on your rental property insurance. Visit Steadily.com for a commitment-free quote tailored to your needs today.
Hey, I want to return back to one question that sure. I asked. I don't think we got to the answer. And then I want to get back into the cycle thing, the buy side. So I remember 07, 08, 09 very, very well. I remember the markets were tanking across the country. I remember, you know, Vegas and Arizona, pretty much the entire state, yeah. And all of Florida were, you know, hitting the skids. Yeah. And I'm sitting and I'm like, you know, half these apartment condo buildings in Florida were, you know, foreclosing. The condos were being foreclosed upon, and you can scoop up condos for nothing. And I'm sitting there, I'm like, you know, I don't know. I'm a little concerned. What is the market going to keep dropping? You know, but I knew the deals were deals, but I didn't have the guts to pull the trigger because I was more concerned that there was a lot more room to go. And so, you know, in retrospect, I probably should have looked a little deeper at the numbers and said, you know, listen, people need a place to live. Somebody's going to end up owning this thing. But what would your take be on that buy side? Like when is it time when a market is tanking as cycles are turning negative, you know, when would somebody know, you know, now is maybe an okay time to start getting in there?
You know, that's a great question. I think it's all return based. Yeah. I just look at this and mind you, we're not talking about, you know, really, really, really rough neighborhoods. We can go buy, you know, a house sure. for $1,000 and yeah. you know, it's going to run for $800. And you know, I know it's your favorite place in Detroit. And I actually grew up in Detroit, outside of suburban Detroit. Uh-huh. Don't hold that against me. So
I don't know. Why do people think I have an issue with Detroit?
But, you know, I think it's all return based. I mean, if I can buy a property unleveraged and buy it for 30 grand, it rents for $800. I mean, yeah. you get to a point where what's the dirt worth? Yeah. I mean, the lot underneath or in some of these, what I did was when I was doing a lot of owner finance deals, I was doing a 5-year amortization straight, no balloon. I mean, it was pay off in 5 and I would get these deals. I'm like, you know what? If I can buy this property and get a tenant, you know, hey, tenant, tell you what, I'm going to let you live in my property for 5 years, but the deal is you're going to pay it off for me. And they were lining up around the corner to do that. And it was crazy. It was just like, hey, if I can put somebody in there and have this thing paid off, you know, and quite frankly, I got in early on some things. I got it. You're just not going to hit the bottom.
Sure.
And they went down and we had an interesting down because they put out that tax credit in 7,500. Remember that tax
yep.
credit?
Yep.
So everybody thought we had this kind of a false run up, but the reality is it was artificial run up where if that tax credit wasn't there, it wouldn't have, it stimulated market. As soon as they took it away, the market dropped back down. And there is locally, I think it's important too, like here, we have somebody that through the, you know, he grew up in England and he went to Oxford. He's a mathematician, really. He's basically a genius and he tracks the market here and he has seminars every couple times a year and he goes and puts the charts on. If you saw these charts, I'll have to send you guys some of his charts and his forms and everything. But this guy breaks it down per foot and you can see at the top, it was going for 180 something bucks a foot. And at the bottom, it was going for, you know, $80 a foot or whatever. And this is average off, you know, nicer, not so nice and everything in between. Yeah. But there's local experts that track this data. And if you look at these charts and you look at the highs and lows, I mean, you can kind of tell when it's starting to turn. I remember even in 06 June, all of a sudden it got quiet here. And it didn't, it's like that cruise ship doing a U-turn. It didn't drop on a dime, but it started that when it was starting to turn. And then 08 was just a drop. But the answer to your question is, I think you just look at returns. If you're making 15, 18, 20% return on your money on leverage, I mean, where are you going to go wrong?
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Well, my next question, I know Brandon wants to jump in with some stuff. Can you time the market for real? I mean, we're talking about it, but like, is this legit? Or, I mean, is timing the market like gambling? A lot of people might think that.
You know, I don't think it is. I just look. You just look when you do exactly what the herd is not doing.
Yeah.
If everybody's, remember in 2005, 2006, you'd go get your haircut and your barber or your stylist is telling you how they just bought two places in Florida or something like that. You know, two condos or two floor. You know, and that's what everybody was doing.
Yeah.
And they got away from the fundamentals. Where if you're buying a house for $200,000 and it rents for $800. You're negative. I don't care if you finance that, you're in the hole every month. So how do you, and that's what I think is you look at the herd and you do exactly what the herd was doing. You know, if you do what the herd's doing, you're going to, that's what happens. If you do exactly the opposite, everyone was running out and scared and short selling and REO. Or if you had any rentals and you made it through you bought them in 05, 06 and then you're still hanging on in 08, 09, last thing you want to do is buy more of those things because you had been bitten, So I don't know if it's, I think you play the numbers and you understand. And if you have a good understanding of buy low, sell high, and you find an area where you get the good statistics, I think it's absolutely possible. Yeah. Absolutely.
And you mentioned a minute ago too, 10 minutes ago, we talked about how, you said something like, I can't remember exactly, but basically if the market dropped and tanked, you're still getting that amazing return on your investment because of the cash flow, right? Yeah. So that's one thing I recommend people all the time. I mean, even if you're in a hot market today, I mean, this is my main piece of advice I give on webinars all the time. If you're in a crazy hot market, still look for an amazing deal that makes sense today. Yeah. Worst case scenario.
With cash flow.
Worst case scenario, the market drops. Hopefully you're still doing okay cash flow wise. And even if you can't find that amazing deal, when the market does drop, you'll have just spent the last 2 or 3 years analyzing deals, you'll be so hot and ready to go above everybody else because now the market's great. So even if you are afraid to buy right now, don't let that stop you from analyzing deals every single day.
Yes. Absolutely. And I'm like I say, I'm not saying, hawk everything, bunker up in the cabin up in north and, but
get your shotgun out.
But for I think you have to find your own philosophy. And right now, I think it's a good time to deleverage instead of 50 or 60 homes leveraged to your eyeballs.
Yep.
It wouldn't be bad to have 20 or 30 just paid off. I don't know too many people that have lost properties being free and clear unless you're not smart enough to pay the taxes, but you know what I mean? Where it's a good time to deleverage. And then if you had 20 or 30 homes free and clear, if all cash breaks loose and the market even goes down again, the free and clear, who cares? They're going to cash flow. The rental market's phenomenal, at least in this town. So I think it's just having an overall philosophy and sticking to it. And that's what I've tried to do. It's right, wrong, or indifferent, but it just, you kind of just figure out where you want to go, have your short, mid, and long-term goals and just follow. And occasionally you tweak them along the way.
Perfect.
Yeah. So.
Cool. All right. Last question about the market cycle. I'm just curious, how can people that are listening to this, how can they get a better grasp on their market cycle? Because markets are different everywhere, right? Your Arizona is different than Washington, different than Denver. How does somebody know their own market?
I mean, a couple things. You can look at historical data, and like we have here in Phoenix, we have publications that'll go back 10 years and publish the price per foot, and it'll show the graph of up and down where the market has been. I think realtors are a great choice. I mean, you could ask somebody, just say, listen, I'm not telling you, ask an agent, I'm not telling you if I'm a buyer or seller, what's the market doing? Oh, it's a great time to sell, because and if four or five or six of the people are telling you the same thing, it's probably more than likely true. Not always, but there's just there's a general mood of the market. And if you can get your finger on that pulse, and I think RIAs are great to go to, go into the local RIAs. Our RIA here puts on a slideshow presentation of market statistics every month.
Yeah.
It's insane.
That's cool.
And I think it's important to go to, with your guys' site, it's a gallery of information where people think about it. Anyone can post anything they want, and you have all the people willing to take their time and their talents to help people out that need it. I think it's great.
Yeah. RIAs can be a great resource for sure. I'm going to counter one thing you just said though, just because, I think it's an important point. What I remember was in 06, 05, 07 even, there was a certain organization that was exuding the values of now being a great time to buy. And there were lots of agents out there who were all hawking, now's a great time to buy. Now's a great time to buy. Yeah. That was at the very, 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 very top. So, I would say, maybe I don't know. You know, you've got to do your own homework. You cannot rely necessarily. I wish more agents were well informed as to markets, and I wish more were well informed as to, you know, how to invest or doing any of that. But at the end of the day, there's a lot who don't know what they're talking about.
Absolutely.
Yeah, well, just be careful is what I'm telling people.
Well, I think too, the piggyback off of what you said is you can never get 100% unbiased opinion if somebody has a vested interest in the outcome of your decision.
Correct. But
what that means is you don't go ask your insurance person, do you need more insurance?
Correct.
What is he going to say? No. Oh, sure. Death, disability, life, dismemberment. And you have to understand that.
No. Continue boiling frogs, dismemberment. What is this show about?
But everyone has their own agenda.
Yeah.
You know, and agents, they're there to sell. During that time, I did 95% listings. All I did was sell the stuff, get them out. I had some buyers that were hot to trot and want to buy. I said, listen, it's a negative cash flow. It's at the top of the market. If you want to buy, I'm warning you right now, we're near the top. I tell them three times after that, hey, sign here, you know, whatever. Yeah. So, in transactional, you get rewarded on doing the transactions, but and some people just don't have a clue.
Exactly.
They just say, they just go where the money's at. So
just be careful is all I'm saying. And, you know, I think that's why a resource like ours is so valuable. You know, ask on Bigger Pockets. We've got local forums, local areas, ways to speak to local people. Ask your questions, you know, get a vibe from lots of different people who are actually knee deep in the market and who may not necessarily be just the transactional guys who are going to make money if you're buying or selling. That, you know, I do well if you buy or sell. Well, great. So you may not give me the best advice.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. There we go. All right. Well, I want to shift gears a little bit to, maybe we might even make this an official segment of the show coming up here, you know, get a little sound effect music, whatever. But, I'm really curious I want to know about your best, like one of your best deals you've ever done and one of your worst, like horror stories. So why don't we start with what's a great deal that you can give us a quick story? And I know you gave us a few already, but anything that stands out is really amazing.
Okay. And I really like out of box stuff. So everybody is doing houses, trying to flip houses. It's tough to flip houses. It's tough to get deals. So I always do different things, but a couple of things just looking over the years, you know, and what was interesting was they're both note deals, which is interesting. I bought bad notes, like seller financing thing. When the person quits paying, the seller doesn't know what to do. I had one where it was on land and she actually lived across the street from the people and she didn't want to foreclose because she was their neighbor. Mm. And so I bought, it was a $100,000 note, bought it for 60 and tried to work out a friendly foreclosure with the guy, called the agent and said, hey, let's try to work out something. She's like, just foreclose, man. The guy's a deadbeat. So I ended up foreclosing on it and took it back and sold it for $160 with owner financing. Took two big down payments. They paid for a number of years and they came back and said, listen, we can't pay anymore. We want to give it back. So I did a friendly deed in lieu, took it back, resold it again. And that was a really good one. So. That was a good one. In another one, and I think it's important to put deadlines on goals. I always wanted to own a commercial building by, you know, mid-June. I put a specific date, June 15th, by X year, I'm going to own my first commercial building. And I came across the deal and, you know, I think when you put positive things out there, things come back. And I think obviously you get blessed and, you know, et cetera. But I had a title company give my number out to a nonprofit organization and let them know that I bought notes and it was on a shopping center. And I ended up working out a friendly foreclosure with this guy. I went there, sat down with them and he was in banking. He was a commercial banker. So I just said, listen, if you want it, we'll work it out. But if you don't, if you sign a deed in lieu, we'll take it back. We'll release you from any liability, no recourse. He was happy. He understood that. And we took that one, you know, took it back and that one's worked out real well. And it was 2 out of the 9 suites were leased. I went through and renovated the outside of it, leased, you know, 7 of the 9 are leased out already. And that one's been a pretty dang good one. So.
That's awesome. Definitely something I want to get into someday. I think that'd be fun. But all right, let's go about the opposite end of that spectrum, the horror stories. Can you tell us
about it?
All right, pick the worst of the worst.
Okay, and it's a twofold deal. Okay,
nice.
And it's a note deal.
Nice.
Okay, so the problem is when you have sometimes more money than brains, you don't know what to do with your money. So instead of just, you know, and that's
run for president.
Exactly, exactly. So during the time when I was selling all my stuff, I'm like, all right, you get so used to high returns that you want to invest it at something. So I did some hard money loans. Okay. Sure. And the thing with hard money loans are is that I went too far. I went 5 years out. And the problem with that is you're caught in a market cycle where you know it's time to sell, but you're trying to convince the borrower it's time to sell. And it, you know, so I had one where I lent on a property to two loans, one borrower. And long story short, I ended up taking back both the properties, right? And then I ended up with one of them at the bottom of the cycle. I think I had 140, 150 into it. I just fire sailed this sucker. It was a weird kind of a quasi adult care thing, but it didn't have any, it had common bathrooms and it was a C- D+ apartment complex. It was just a dog.
Sounds like a winner.
Oh yeah. It was a dog. And so I ended up selling it. And I think I got like 30. I lost over 100 on that sucker.
Wow.
And the day I got 30, oh, I was so happy. I took that check and ran that sucker to the bank and cashed it. Because, you know, I mean, it was a dog. But, you know, what's interesting, though, is a lot of times you try to make bad things into good. And I took that 30, bought a great house at the bottom of the cycle, and I'm right back to where I'm at with where, you know, it's worth 130, 140.
Yeah.
Nice. Nice. So, but it was a terrible deal. Yeah, I guess hard money loans, I got creamed on a couple of them. Yeah. So
there's something gratifying about unloading something that's killing you.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
A lot of people will sit on those things and they're like, you know, they're bleeding to death. Like it's a slow drip, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, since you started this real visceral visual episode here, you know, bloodletting. But like, you know, and like, hey, what should I do? What should I do? I'm bleeding.
Yeah.
You know, there's always other opportunities. Like if you're, you know, bleeding to death, then stop the bleeding. You know,
I already lost. The money was lost. Yeah. It's already lost. It's whether or not you choose to realize it. I'm like, you know what? I'm the type where, you know, when I talk to friends, I'm like, listen, tell me the good, bad, and the ugly about whatever, to be totally blunt. And because the truth is the truth. Yeah. And if it's a dog deal, it's a piece of junk. It is what it is. As soon as you realize it, you cut it loose, you get that cancer out of your life.
Yep.
And
by the way, it may not be, you know, let's clarify that because it may be a cancer for you, right? Somebody else comes in and it's a great opportunity. You know, it's, hey, this is something that at this phase in my life or with the resources that I have or kind of, you know, I just had a kid or whatever it is, you know, we all have our own personal situations that affect our decisions. So like, you know, to you, what just, it's not worth it anymore. Maybe a screaming opportunity for somebody else who's like, yeah, I love dealing with these kinds of tenants. Yeah. I love dealing with these issues. So like, you know, we're here talking about this stuff. And to the listener, you know, don't think that just because we say, you know, it's time to let go means that something's necessarily a bad deal. It just means that it's not working out necessarily.
Well, and that goes to tell you too. I mean, I'm supposed to know what the heck I'm doing. And sometimes you don't. And sometimes you know, the guy that looks for motivated sellers is a motivated seller.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the guy that took the property did great with it. I mean, he's renovated it and stuff. It was just out of my scope. And it's just, sometimes you just don't have the mental capital to spend to do that, where it's just, you know what? I could focus my efforts better on something I'm more efficient at and just let him go and do the build out on that thing and mess with it. I didn't want to fool with it. So
nice. Awesome.
There you go. All right.
I think it's time, Brandon.
I think it's time for the world famous.
It's time for the fire round.
These are questions that come direct out of the Bigger Pockets forums, and we're going to fire them right at you. So,
which you could get to at biggerpockets.com/forums. Guys like David are sometimes active on said forums, even.
Yeah, there you go.
We'll be in the future.
All right, number one. This actually ties in well with our conversation today. What are a few key points that you would tell to somebody who just does not understand market cycles?
You know, just learn the numbers. I think if you can understand how to figure out what your returns are, that'll kind of show you where you're at in the market cycle. I mean, if you're getting to the point where the returns are terrible, I mean, you know, I mean, it's important to have knowledge and understand it and don't rely on anybody else. I think when everything's said and done, the buck should stop with you, where you're ultimately responsible for your own financial well-being. So,
right on.
Cool.
All right. Here's kind of another related question. Do you feel that understanding the cycles of the market can help you easily determine when and where to buy?
I think so. I think so. Because like when I bought in California, what I did is I started off looking at what was the worst market in the country and trying to figure out, sometimes they're bad for a reason and they're never going to come back.
Yeah.
But you find some that says, okay, why would this come back? Okay, it's proximity to LA, or I don't know California that well, but it's a commuter's market. And they had tons of buildable land back then, and it was just prime for you know, development. So
Chernobyl, for example, may not be the best market.
Exactly.
Right.
All right, number three. Should someone who is looking to buy their first investment property look at land over an established home?
It depends. If you can pay cash for land, the only holding, I mean, it's an alligator. You'll feed it every month if you're just, but I think it's a good way where you can get in cheap. And I mean, there's some parcels we can buy for a couple of $1,000s. And I bought, you know, some stuff up north for $7,500. I bought, you know, six parcels. One of them even had a billboard on it on the freeway where I got income off the billboard and had 5-acre parcels kind of around and for a low amount of money. And, you know, what you can do is buy it cash and then turn around and sell it on terms and just, you know, double or triple the price. So,
wow, that's cool.
Right on. We should talk about that on another show.
Yeah.
So last question of the fire round. When looking for an out-of-area property, what do you specifically look for? Does it need to be in certain shape to feel comfortable not being there? I know earlier you had talked about, you know, it's hard investing at a distance. So, you know, what would get you to do it?
You know, and I kind of flip stuff throughout the state now. And I just, the trick is looking to make sure everything that's wrong with it's curable and easy to fix. Where if you're going out of, you know, going out of area 2-3-4 hour drive, you're not going to want to have to deal with, you know, stuff that you have to rewire, replumb, mainly do cosmetic stuff. Cause you know, you go in there, you're just going to estimate what you think it's going to cost and just make it simple. Where in the deals that I've done out of area, I've just tried to make it a goal where I just want to go there once to buy and maybe once to meet contractor there in the beginning and wants to see how it ended up. And that was it. I just did one about an hour and a half away and I only went there 3 times total and just sold it last week and it turned out great.
Nice. So, nice.
Yeah, right on.
Cool. All right. Well, hey, let's move over to the final section of the show, which we lovingly call our Famous Four. All right. These are the four questions that we ask every guest every week. They're the exact same questions. So number one, I'm sure you know what's coming, but number one, what is your favorite real estate related book?
This is one I read. I read two in the beginning. One was by the Millens. They're the real estate agents here that are agents, investors, and it was Arizona specific. It's How to Buy and Manage Rental Properties. I mean, I'm sure it's out there, but this is 20 years ago. I read another one, How to Buy Properties at a 20% or More Discount. That was really good because 20 years ago, you just didn't have the podcast and all the information out there that people have now. So those were the books and they were pretty good back in the day. So,
right on. Cool. What about favorite business book today?
You know, I really like two. I like anything with Tony Robbins, you know, positive mental, you know, associating more pleasure than pain and that kind of thing, as well as, you know, thinking positive. And then Brian Tracy with Sales Techniques.
Right on.
Anything with those two guys are excellent. So cool. I've read a lot of their stuff.
Cool. So what do you do for fun? I know you've got some kids.
Three
kids.
You know,
kids club. Yeah.
You know, believe it or not, I'm a short guy and I'm in my mid 40s, but I play basketball every day for 2 hours. So Monday through Thursday.
Oh, wow.
And, yeah, it's half the time it doesn't end well. I mean, I broke my nose 4 or 5 months ago playing. I had to wear a brace on my, you know, one of those face masks.
Nice.
And, broke my hand playing, broke my thumb and, but it's fun. I mean, I enjoy it. So it's real fun. So
I gave up on basketball because I realized when I hit 30, like every time I played, I would hurt myself. I was like, it's just, I'm done.
Yeah. These guys are twice my size and half my age, but it's
nice.
That's cool. So. All right. My last question of the day, Dave, what do you believe sets apart successful investors from those who give up or fail or never get started?
You know what? There's a quote by Calvin Coolidge and I'm going to read it. That's okay. Calvin Coolidge.
Is that like one of our presidents or something?
Yep.
Wow.
Nothing in the world takes the place of persistence. Talents will not. Nothing is more common than unsuccessful men with talent. Genius will not. Unrewarded genius is almost a proverb. Education will not. The world is full of educated derelicts. Persistence and determination are omnipotent. So I mean, that's it. I mean, you don't have to be the smartest guy in the room or girl. You don't have to be the best. You just have to be determined and persistent. You can't, I all the time I have people, oh, hey, I want to get into real estate, this and that. But unless you have the fire in your belly, it's tough to succeed. Cause I always say the highs are high and the lows are low, you know, and it's emotional roller coaster. I mean, you do great deals and then you get creamed and then, you know, it's just up and down. So, but persistence and determination, extremely important. So,
and Calvin Coolidge is my new favorite president.
Yep.
It's a great quote.
My dad gave it to me years ago, you know, when I was on a mission, you know, 20 years ago, and he sent me this little quote, and I used to read it all the time when I get down on myself. So it was really good. So
nice. Cool. Were you with Dan Aykroyd and Belushi on that mission? All right. My last question is, how can people find you? You know, where can they connect with you if they want to, besides the show notes, which you can find at biggerpockets.com/show188?
Email is azbroker@icloud.com. Webpage is azpropertystore.com. So if you have anything, just reach out to me via email. And especially if you have a question or you're trying to get started or whatever, and be more than happy to help. So real estate's a fun biz. I mean, but you have to have that passion. I always tell people you will either love it or you'll curse the day you got into it. I mean, it's one extreme or another. And I absolutely love it. I absolutely love it. It's a great business. So
love to hear that, man.
Yeah.
Love to hear that. Well, David, thank you so much for coming on the show. It's been a pleasure.
Likewise. Thank you.
Really, really enjoyed it. And we'll see you around Bigger Pockets, and lots of luck to you going forward. As
you
know, we didn't actually, you know what? I'm not going to end. What's the future holding for you, David? We usually ask that. We didn't ask that question today. So yeah, what do you got?
You know, I've been doing this 20 plus years, and what I've kind of doing now is just kind of consolidating. And my goal is next summer to kind of take a extended vacation sabbatical. And right now I think there's a great opportunity for the next year to get in and get out real quick on certain things, at least here. And I'd really like to, you know, spend a lot of time next summer with the family vacationing and just enjoy life, because that's what it's all about. I mean, you know, money comes, money goes, but the important things of life, you know, it's, you know, it'll magnify what you are. And if you do well, it magnify that you're a great person. And if you do well and you're not a great person, it'll magnify that as well. But I think it's important to, you know, give back and help other people, because we've all been there. And, you know, I've had mentors along the way that have really helped me out and spent tireless hours explaining things on how they work. And I think it's important to give back. So I want to spend more time, give back, and just enjoy life a little bit more. So.
I love it. Well, yeah. Let's end it there. David, thank you so much, man.
Hey, thanks, guys. I really appreciate it.
Hey, thank you. We'll see you around.
Thanks. All right, bye.
All right, guys. That was David Gundmanson. Big thanks to David. That was great. I love talking about the cycles. I think it's fascinating.
Yeah, me too. And you know what? One thing he said during the show, like, hit me harder than I think. I mean, it really, really impacted
Somebody
me a lot.
Somebody used to hit you.
No, so here's what he said. He said when he was using the analogy of the musical chairs, and he said, you know, I don't have to be, you know, whatever, the last one in the chair. He's like, I just, when everyone's up dancing, the lights are off and the music's going, I just grab a chair and sit down and put my feet up. And like, I always feel like I have to time the market and I got to figure out, are we almost there? Are we almost at the peak yet? But like, I love his attitude of, you know what? Even if we're not at the peak, even if it's going to go up another couple of years, I would rather be out early than out late.
Oh, yeah.
And I love that kind of thinking, that analogy really kind of helped solidify a few decisions in my mind of whether or not I'm going to sell or a couple of my big properties. I think I might just end up selling them.
Yeah. Yeah. I had that philosophy after when I was a stock trader. That was one of the things that we always were taught is, you know, you want to sell on the way up. So, you know, let's say you buy 1,000 shares and this thing starts to tick up. So, you know, unload 100 shares every, you know, a couple points, unload another 100 shares and lighten the load a little bit. You can't really do that with a single property, but if you have a portfolio and you think things are going to potentially turn, lock in those gains as you go up. I think it's just, you know, it's potentially a smart strategy.
I fully agree.
And you know what, at the end of the day, like, it's not a race, right? So like, you're not competing against everyone else. You're competing against yourself. So, you know, if you've gotten some gains, lock them in, get out. Like, would you rather have that, or would you rather have, you know, have the opposite where everybody's suddenly selling? You can't keep up and the price keeps dropping. I've experienced it. It's a horrible feeling.
Yep.
Selling on the way down is not fun. So
agreed.
I'd rather unload on the way up every single time.
Cool.
Yeah, man.
Agreed.
Everything else good?
Everything else is pretty good.
Yeah, you know, my little smart-ass remark earlier about the president, we've got lots of rich candidates running here. And we've actually reached out. I don't know. We've reached out to some of the campaigns,
I think all of them by now. I got one more to hit up, so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We're trying to get them on the show, guys. We would like to see if we can get the candidates to speak about housing policy here on the Bigger Pockets podcast.
Yeah. So if you have a connection to any of the presidential candidates right now and you can hook us up with their media people or whatever and put in a good word for us, we'd love to get the big presidential candidates on this show talking about real estate, business, life, all that good stuff. So hook us up.
Real estate. Life. Whatever. Tell me your deepest thoughts.
Yeah. All right.
All right, man. Well,
let's get out of here.
It's been fun. You guys, thank you so much. And make sure to get out there. Make sure, as Brandon talked about, make sure you're evaluating deals. Make sure you're researching. Even if you're a newbie, you got to learn. You got to work. You know, you can't just sit on your behind and this business is going to work for you. So, you know, evaluate deals, network, connect, ask questions, jump on the Bigger Pockets site, the forums, the blogs. Go to your local meetups, go to local events in your area, connect with other investors and make it happen. And with that, I'm Josh Dorkin, signing off.
You're listening to Bigger Pockets Radio, simplifying real estate for investors large and small. If you're here looking to learn about real estate investing without all the hype, you're in the right place. Be sure to join the millions of others who have benefited from BiggerPockets.com. Your home for real estate investing online.
There's a reason small multifamily investing is so popular in the Bigger Pockets community. With just a 3.5% down payment, you can own up to 4 different units. Think about it. If you house hack and live in one of the units, you still have 3 different groups of tenants helping you pay down your mortgage every month, 4 kitchens and bathrooms you could renovate to increase your property value, 4 different Airbnbs, medium-term rentals, or other rental strategies that you can try in one property, all in just one transaction. Of course, the question is, where do you find a small multifamily property that you can actually afford? Which market and which deals are best for you? Once you close, how do you manage it, optimize it, keep scaling, and living your life without being tied down to 4 leaky toilets or 4 fussy tenants? All great questions, my friends. All to be answered in the upcoming Small Multifamily Bootcamp with Chris Lopez and Leka Devatha. So if you're serious about growing your portfolio with this highly efficient strategy, head to biggerpockets.com/4, F-O-U-R, today and join us in the Small Multifamily Bootcamp. See you there.
The content of this podcast is for informational purposes only. Past performance is not indicative of future results, and all hosts and participant opinions are their own.
Investment in any asset, real estate included, involves risk. Use your best judgment and consult with qualified advisors before investing. Only risk capital you can afford to lose.
Bigger Pockets LLC disclaims all liability for direct, indirect, consequential, or other damages arising from reliance upon information presented in this podcast.